Welcome to Your Making It Worse. We're here, we're queer, who cares? I'm Elliot Glazer.
And I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
Textual healing.
I am still a so woman. Touched. Oh, you. You son of a bitch. No, I wanted to tell our listeners, I'm so touched. This is the first year that Elliot, Allen, and I have exchanged gifts for Pride.
Oh, fucking hell.
I'm feeling really emotional right now because I don't know if our listeners exchange gifts with their friends for Pride, but Elliot got Allen and I, and all three of us, in fact, a 22 karat gold chains with a message on each. Mine says, good friend, which is such a sweet and wonderful sentiment. And I really appreciate that, Elliot. I'm actually getting a little emotional thinking about it. Alan's says smart guy, which is very, you know, very true. Alan's very smart.
But very gendered. Very gendered.
Also, yeah, it is a little gendered. And of course, Elliot says fuck machine. But honestly, they're beautiful, and I'm just so touched.
But you're welcome.
Thank you so much. And in case anyone's wondering, I got the guys some certs, breath mints, and Alan got us, I don't know, some fucking boring book I threw away.
He doesn't even care to come up with something stupid that I could get you to.
No, you got us a book, and I threw it away.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Now, on to the item of the agenda. In case you were...
The agenda.
Wonderful transition. Next at the board meeting, we're going to talk about room 506.
This literally happened. This is news you probably have already heard by now, and this because it literally happened like an hour before we recorded last week's episode of You're Making It Worse. But the NFL now has its first officially openly gay player, Carl Nassib. Active season player. He plays for the Las Vegas Raiders, which is a team I did not know existed. You've probably heard about it now, obviously. Wait, what?
I mean, I only knew the Raiders because I love the color scheme. I mean, the
black
and
the
gray.
Raiders were like in LA, right?
Yeah, LA Raiders, they were.
They were, but then they moved because LA. How do I know this? That LA, it became the Rams. I know that because the Rams were in St. Louis and I remember them from St. Louis.
I thought you were gonna make some like weird gay Ram joke or something. Carl announced he created his Instagram video that you've probably seen by now. He announced he's donating it.
Hey guys, I just wanted to get on to say I'm gay.
Yeah, I love that. I love
100 grand to the Trevor Project. And Elliot quickly got a message. Elliot celebrated on Instagram about Carl Nassib's coming out, and he quickly received a comment that said, "Carl Nassib's a Republican. How dare you?"
I got a lot of those, actually.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of surprised at how quickly people, like, literally within, like, a day, it was like the internet just shifted, and they were like, yay. I mean, there is that. You know, we're very quick to praise, but then, of course, the internet sleuthing
praise
happens
and tear
things,
down.
We tear down whatever. But within a day, just to lay out the facts, it was that Carl Nassib is a registered Republican. He registered to be Republican in 2020 during likely the presidential election, which, you know, put two and two together there. And then he was seen in photos with like people wearing Trump supporter gear and stuff. And that's his. He hasn't said anything political. He hasn't posted anything political. So we can't completely label him this, but
that is what
we know. Yeah,
it is. I mean, I still just think it's a little absurd. Like, you can't just, I mean, you can celebrate a first without celebrating someone in their entirety, in their totality, and you can celebrate, hey, this is a cool accomplishment, good for him for coming out, and I think that it's worthy of respect, but that doesn't also mean that I think he needs a statue in his honor. Near the Las Vegas Raiders Stadium or wherever the hell they play, you know.
Were they going to put up a statue? Did someone say that?
No. I'm just saying, yeah, you can recognize him for his accomplishment. There's a lot of people in American history who have complicated histories, yeah. You know, who Abraham did a lot of great Lincoln. Things and did a lot of bad things. And like, I think it's totally absurd when people are like, yeah. If you've done anything bad, I disagree with, you're a monster. You're the problem. I just think it's totally absurd.
Yeah, I think it was like, oh, that it was kind of, somebody sent me a picture before even somebody else was like, you know, he voted for Trump or whatever. Before even that, somebody sent me a picture of him with a couple of like dude friends. And one of them is wearing
It was his cousin.
His cousin's wearing a shirt that says like legends were born in June or July or whatever. And it's Trump. And it's like, But being said, it's like, that's so gross. But also like, he's not wearing the shirt. And also like, I don't know. It's like gross, but it just was, and it was nice for a fleeting moment to have a guy be like, hey guys, I'm gay, you know, just so you know, I'm donating money and please leave me alone. Bye. You know, I liked how nonchalant it was, but kind of quickly soured.
I think I was kind of two minds with it. I do think it's good that someone of his sort of caliber got a message out to a group of people who wouldn't normally either give to the Trevor Project or wouldn't know what the Trevor Project is. And he did a good thing by shining a light on a real problem. I mean, suicide, death by suicide amongst queer people in general, especially trans queer people and just queer people in general, is huge. It's colossal. It's insane. And there needs to be more of a focus on the need for help and outreach. And Trevor Project does that.
Yeah.
On the flip side of it, though, I do think that, you know, he is a public figure and he is not immune from scrutiny and he's not immune from his records being public. And he knows full well that he likely voted for Trump. He clearly is a registered Republican. It's not hard to know how the internet works these days. You put two and two together. Like, he knew that was going to happen, or someone on his team knew that was going to happen. Now, should it completely cancel him? No. But what it should do is we should ask ourselves, why are we freaking out? I mean, sure, it's in the United States here and we love football in the United States and it's a thing, but why are we freaking out over this sort of, you know, regular football player white dude coming out when literally an awesome woman in the same week, she didn't come out, but she sort of came to prominence.
The track star?
Kumi, yeah, the track star. And it's like,
oh my God, she was
this woman.
She's a soccer player,
Is she a soccer?
No,
she's a track star. She's a track star. Yeah.
No,
she's the fastest woman in the U.S., right?
Or something? Wait, are we talking Kumi Yokoyama?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm confusing people now. But in the same week that Carl came out, she came out. Can you help me on the name there, Melly?
Yeah, I'm looking
that
up.
And the fact that, like, the news cycle immediately shifted from everyone's freaking out.
Shakari Richardson.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah. The fact that the news cycle shifted from praising her when she was always out and she was always sort of, like, being a prominent Black, you know, queer voice in Olympic sports, and to Carl, I get the need. I get why it shifted in that way. I'm a little bummed that they couldn't have had parallel breaking news. You know what I mean? It couldn't have been like two big stories on its own. I don't know.
I get that. I mean, also, I mean, obviously, like, not to downplay the significance of her coming out, but, and we'll talk about the soccer star in a second, but like, you know, NFL is obviously America's favorite sport by a huge margin. And so I can recognize that's going to, you know, get quote better ratings. I was also going to say what received less press, probably because Americans don't give a fuck about soccer, is that a professional soccer player in the National Women's Soccer League, her name is Kumi Yokoyama, came out as transgender. In the future, they plan to eventually quit soccer and live as a man. The big story of their coming out was how they talked about the difference between Japan and the United States when it comes to transgender perceptions and acceptance. And President Biden congratulated both of them in a tweet, by the way.
Oh, look at President Biden doing his thing. I think it's, we should be applauding Carl. There is space in the community to applaud in action while at the same time also hold him accountable for things that directly, his sort of stance on things that directly impact the community in a very negative way. Like, we can have the same conversation. He shouldn't be canceled.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
All right, great ending.
Not even joking.
We're here.
All right, go ahead, Elliot.
rinse old bit. We are here with Gabe Gonzalez, comedian, host, activist, right? I mean, you've kind of
a B. Arthur impersonator.
Tour
today,
de force.
Tour de force. With that force. Voice,
the B. Arthur.
I'll take tour de force. I don't know if I'd say activist, but I will take tour de force. I'll take that.
Everyone's
one.
An activist these days. And if you're not, you're the problem. Yeah. You're joining
it's true,
us. From,
it's true. Yeah.
You're joining us from New York, where you ostensibly are suffering, sort of, you're on vocal rest after celebrating Pride.
Yeah, I'm really, you know, just pulling a Julie Andrews right now in honor of the season. No, I'm thankfully will recover. Oh, I'm sorry, Julie, if you're listening. No,
yeah, that was cut deep because that was a real American tragedy.
That was true. Mm. That was truly mind-boggling when I learned.
Just she had a surgery. The doctor said it wouldn't hurt her voice, and it wound up she was never able to sing again. And she, of course, she sued. And now she made even more money than she didn't need. Yeah. But. Yeah. Whatever.
And then she
but
made the
I've
princess.
I've heard diamonds. She's a monster. Yes. I've heard.
And
she's
then
a
her
monster,
singing. No, she's not a monster at all. Her singing.
Yeah, I've heard she's really.
Her
mean.
Singing in Princess Diaries too, with Raven Simone and what like literally on top of the thing, the talk singing thing. It's my drag.
Bill, you lost me. So let's continue.
What did you do for Pride?
Oh gosh. So this was Pride this weekend was really interesting because I think there were so many things going on. Mm-hmm. Like there were so many parties and so many options. I think everybody was sort of overwhelmed for choice. So I feel like people kind of ended up splintering a lot in New York, but the beauty of it was that I was very ambitious in that way. So it's like I had three comedy shows Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So I was like, cool, I've got like a venue, a gig, hang out with these folks, see where the night takes me kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really it's still a bit surreal kind of getting back to nightlife. You know, all of these shows have required proof of vaccination going in. And so there's sort of that level of security and kind of trying to keep everybody safe. But there's just something so, I don't know, everyone's a lot friendlier. I don't know how else to say it. It's not that we were all assholes before, but I think everyone's really eager to get out and just have a good time and not be, I don't know, weird or passive aggressive about small things.
So you're saying like you think the gay community is being friendlier?
Yeah, honestly, everybody. I'll take everybody. There was a bartender I thought was gay that was being very friendly, but he was just looking for a lovely tip. And I did provide because it's weird times right now. Everyone's real thirsty in many ways. But yeah, I don't know. I just think people are generally more down to kind of talk and be less in their circles and be very inviting and kind of warm. And I think it's maybe this collective desire to kind of just like be around each other again. Like we've been gone for so long. And it's nice to see comics. It's really interesting. And, you know, you're self-conscious kind of going on stage at first, bringing back old stuff because you're like, okay, like we'll try out some new things, but like I need these last 3 minutes to really kill so we can all have a great night.
Yeah.
And everybody else is kind of on the same boat, right? It's like we're all dipping our toes into new stuff, but everybody's sort of getting into the rhythm of it as well.
Yeah.
So it's been just interesting to see that process live again rather than on Zoom.
We had a thing a couple weeks ago where we were talking about Pride and it was with Meatball and Big Dipper where we talked about moving Pride. I think it was with them moving Pride from the summer to the winter and the reaction from people on social media was insane. People
very
want
negative.
This to happen. Do you agree?
Oh, good. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised how popular the idea was.
I want Pride in November.
Do you agree that Pride should be in the cooler months or did you today take your top off and relish in the humidity of New York City?
Oh God, I'm a fan of fall fashion. I really thrive in that setting. So for selfish reasons, I would suggest, you know what? Why not both? Let's have both.
Now you're going crazy.
We don't need both. We don't need both.
Gabe, save it.
I can't handle tweets from Raytheon twice a year.
I'll take the free Dunkin' Donut moment, but that's about it. That's about all I'll take.
I definitely had like I think I had a sort of reckoning this weekend where I was in New York for a couple of weeks with family and friends and stuff. And, you know, for me, it was chaotic just being there and trying to see everyone I could post COVID, but also deal with my sister who's pregnant. And so all this stuff is happening. And then separately from that, I guess I was in New York when LA Pride was happening. And then I left New York in time for New York Pride to be happening. Mm-hmm. I didn't do either of those things by design, but I would have had I known. And it's not because we've talked about this before, but I am by no means at all mad at Pride. I think it's fantastic that it exists. I think it's important. I think it's crucial, but I can't help but feel like when I see these videos from like huge parties and like huge groups of guys together and
You wonder about the AC. Yeah.
No, I mean, yes. Yeah. Yes. First and foremost, yes. But also, I genuinely feel like, I just feel like that would be panic inducing for me. And I'm just, I think I'm continually just surprised by the sort of merriment that so many people at Pride seem to be able to just kind of lock into so easily, whereas I'm like, I would have a full blown.
I would walk into that bar with a scowl on my face, arms crossed, you know, shirt, the shirt never comes off.
Yeah. In fact, he's wearing the parka. He's sitting there. Yeah.
I just think it's for our listeners to know that if you feel the same, if you feel like a quiet gay, or you feel like a socially anxious gay, we see you, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Are you that gay? Are you socially anxious? What's your anxiety level?
I think
in public?
It really depends. There have certainly been some prides where I've maybe just seen three friends on a roof and hung out, and that's enough for me. Mm. Like I'm a very like I want to be with community during Pride, but I do genuinely feel that way, right? I want to be with people that I don't know, I'm excited to be around, that teach me things, that make me a better person, that make me feel affirmed within our community. And so it's like, I think this is the first Pride where I've been working, kind of, you know what I mean? I'm not making a ton, but I'm working. And so it was nice to kind of have that structure. And I think it gave me an excuse to be more active, as evidenced by my voice. But I don't know. It's really exciting also to attend events that are either raising funds for some of the most vulnerable people in our community, or are working to support in some way, sort of like less corporate, more community focused Pride as well. Like, I've really appreciated those events cropping up more and more, I think, in New York and in queer communities around the country. And it's nice to kind of remind ourselves that, yes, obviously, like, this is a month to celebrate and hang out and feel like we get to take a weight off a little bit if we allow ourselves that this month, you know what I mean? But it is very important also to remember, I don't know, sort of how this all started in 1969 and the sort of words that were exchanged at that first Christopher Street Liberation Parade, where, like, even back then there were conversations regarding the exclusion of trans women of color and non-binary people of color in these events, right? These sort of respectability politics that have always been at play. So, like, I am like, yes, fucking, like, take a bottle of poppers into a Target, sniff it and feel seen, do whatever you want to do. But like, I think, you know, it's a time to, like, let ourselves go, but also remind ourselves what we owe the more vulnerable members of our community, you know, wherever we feel that we might be on.
I had a moment years ago in New York, probably the most memorable Pride I've ever had was the Pride that marriage equality was, you know, legalized in New York City. And I was there, I was living there at the time. And I remember, and I was not very much a Pride person, because I used to work in politics, and every politician marched in every single borough's Pride. So I would have to go with every politician to every fucking Pride parade. And I was done with it. I was done being outdoors and having back sweat publicly. Pride, public back sweat is not cute. Anyway, and so that Pride, I was like, okay, the night it's happening, it was like Friday night, and it was all happening in perfect marketing sequence. Like, literally, they pass it on Thursday night or something on Friday morning, and then it becomes law on Saturday, and then Andrew Cuomo's fucking marching in the streets on Sunday. It couldn't be planned better. Yeah. But that night, that Friday night, I went, my buddy and I, we were like, well, we should go to Stonewall, right? That's what everyone's doing. We should go to Stonewall. Let's go to Stonewall. So I go to Stonewall. I'm feeling good. Yay, Pride or whatever. And this fucking bartender at Stonewall, no offense to the bartenders at Stonewall. I love you, because many of you are great. But one of them confused me for someone who, like, did something shitty. And she just started throwing limes at me. Just throwing, like, literally just throwing limes at me. And I was like, that's it. So fuck Pride. Funny. Never again. I'm not doing Pride
really
again.
Hilarious.
Someone did something shitty to her. And she thought, because I am a white dude, I look like every other white dude, that she thought I was that white dude who did something shitty. And it wasn't me. No. And I gave her a fucking $20 tip when I wasn't making $20 tip.
Oh my God. You gave her and that's really funny. Wait, can I say this real quick? I had a not quite the similar thing with limes, but when I go to the gym, I go to LA Fitness in downtown Los Angeles. I go every day at the same
time.
Steam
room.
And and the woman who works at the front desk, you know, basically every day, always greets me by name. She's very nice. And then
what name do you tell her?
Actually, I go by my middle name, so she calls me James. Yeah. which I'm comfortable with. But then out of the blue, I mean, I literally go at the same time every day. Out of the blue, like on Friday, she's like, oh, so you stopped coming in the mornings. And I instantaneously was like, how ugly is the guy that she thinks is me that she sees every day? That's the only thing I could think of.
Always.
I'm like, she clearly thinks I'm someone else, and I need to know what he looks like to make myself feel
I'm
awful.
Sure he's better than your doppelganger has to be better than mine.
Perez Hilton. Please.
Yes. Everyone thinks I'm Perez Hilton whenever a camera's in my face. So like
no,
yours is
definitely
yes.
Really funny story.
You have no fucking idea. Everywhere I go, if there's a camera, it's I'm Perez Hilton.
That's so funny.
Yes.
Anyway,
there was a period of time where I had a mustache and I would just like walk through Bushwick and people would assume I was one of, I guess, 10 small gay men with a mustache. It's half the reason I got rid of it. I was like, I can't do that. It wasn't even the same person every time. It was like a mixed array of different ethnicities and types of men. Most of them were gay. All of them had mustaches. It was very disappointing.
Well, you're a pretty preeminent voice on a lot of gay issues. I mean, you host hosting, which is Scruff's Lives Trivia Show, where you talk about like queer history, but also sex and pop culture. You also host the Lavender Scare, which is a live show that's an irreverent exploration of LGBTQIA history. So I'm just curious. I think that all of us are curious. We, in the previous segment, we were talking about Carl Nassib. Curious what you think about him coming out and then also being discovered to be a Republican and how much that bothers you.
No, totally. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I kind of talked about this a little bit last week as well. On the Queerty Pod, but I think, you know, two things sort of come to mind here, right? First of all, regarding the coming out of Carl Nassib, I feel like we celebrate very specific firsts a lot. And I think like, that's a great thing, right? We want to celebrate every single small win, but sometimes I wonder like how much we erase other people who kind of paved the way for Carl Nassib to get there, right? So like I particularly thought of, and I saw a lot of people online also did, of Michael Sam, who came out in 2014, right? The first gay black man to get drafted into the NFL, but never made it onto a team, right? So if we want to be like the first openly gay person in the NFL, I guess it's Michael Sam, but then we kind of like narrow in and it's like, okay, well, Carl Nassib has his specific angle of being this first, right? And that's fine. I think we should celebrate everybody, but it is, I just hope that we remember the Michael Sams, right? That those don't get lost. And we're like, okay, here's this dude now who's doing it and is on a team, like as if this qualifier somehow made the coming out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's worth considering how difficult it was for Michael Sam to come out in 2014. Like it's easy to forget how quickly kind of attitudes change. And as I've said before, you know, I don't think the NFL is a league known for being very welcoming of black folks or queer folks or people who are both. So it's like at least the fandom, right? The associations that I had with football growing up. And so
do you think he'll be on Dancing with the Stars too?
God, Jesus, of course he will at some point. He'll be right on there with Aaron Schock. It'll be a lovely little way. But you know, the thing that was frustrating about Carl Nassib is that he it seemed that his political involvement aligned with Trump coming into office, that he registered as a Republican in 2020 in a swing state. And so I think that that alignment is fairly clear. And I think that we all know how to recognize the hypocrisy of queer people who are voting against their interests, but because they are white and wealthy or privileged in whatever way they're doing that. I mean, I know Latinos in my own family who voted for Trump, and it's entire like absurd, like immigrants who came to this country in the 70s and are voting for someone like him. And so we need to point that shit out, basically. We do need to talk about it. And I do think that, you know, nobody should be immune from facing that sort of criticism, especially considering the kind of person Trump was. Like, I just,
I hear you. I'm always a little torn, though, just because we talked about this on the podcast many months ago, but exit polls showed that Donald Trump in 2020 did better with gay voters than any Republican has done, I think, since what, like 92, as I recall. And so it's shocking, but you're like, well, if we're going to be consistent, we should be consistent, which is anytime. And look, maybe the internet does this, maybe Twitter does this, but anytime anyone does anything of note, and they're given credit for it, we should, I guess we have to look up their voter registration and find out who and what they support. And when did they vote? Did they vote in primaries? You know, I don't know. Like I hear you 100%, Gabe. And I obviously was disheartened, but then you're also like, yeah, there's a lot of people who supported Trump for a lot of varying reasons. And they're not all monsters, even though if you find me on the wrong day, I'll tell you they're all monsters. But
it's also the dance. It's the dance of like, you might not think they're monsters, and there is a way to be openly critical of someone who is clearly voting against, you know, the community's best interest while also pretending to, not pretending, but also saying we need to end these things that are hurting the community and I'm donating money. There is a double face. There's two-sided coin there. That's a little like he's getting it from both ends. And there is a deep-seated privilege involved in him being able to be able to say, I support the Trevor Project, which so does not support, it's not a political organization, but they're not, those donors that are not supporting Trump. Yeah. And at the same time, vote for Trump. Now, I'm not saying we should cancel him for voting Trump, because I do think there is a place in the community for dissenting voices within the gay community. Like, one of the things I always say is, it's okay to consider a gay person an asshole, because sometimes they are. Like, I don't have to be singing praises for every single homosexual out there, queer person out there, because sometimes they make really, really, really stupid, fucked up decisions and hope that by my visibility and what I say, they will learn the error of their ways.
Yeah.
Well, like, yeah, it's the thing is, our community is certainly not monolithic, right? And some queer folks will put their self-interest above others. And, you know, I think to what Brett said earlier, I get, yeah, there are a lot of people that did, and that's something we're going to have to reckon with and talk about. But I think when somebody's asking for a platform, or, you know, maybe seeking kind of, I don't know, sponsorships, right? Yeah, to be a sort of representative for a community, I think it is important to ask those questions. I want to know who I am uplifting, heightened right? scrutiny. How to approach this. Absolutely. And I think it's valid when you're asking for that kind of platform, or perhaps the timing of it coincides with, you know, something else that you want to do that is relatively high profile. I think anybody with a platform definitely has a responsibility to at least answer to those things so that people who may or may not want to support them know what they're getting into, right?
Would you look at his nudes if they were leaked, though? Like, because I probably would. Oh, God. I mean, what, you know?
Like, would you look
like
I mean, feel like I've had an abundance this pandemic. I feel like
my political leanings either way would not prevent me from looking at a Trump supporter's nudes if leaked. I mean, just, you know, I probably would.
Remember in 2008 during a simpler time when Sarah Palin was the worst person you could imagine? Yeah. And was it? Sean Cody offered Levi Johnston.
Oh, yeah.
The Playgirl did.
Oh, wow.
I think it was Sean Cody.
Sean Cody might have also done it, but he had the spread in Playgirl. It wasn't quite a spread, though. Oh, he literally didn't spread. He kept those cheeks together.
Levi Johnston, who was like Sarah Palin's daughter's husband or baby mom or something, and like he offered him like, what was it, $100,000?
The guy who used to do the Playgirl shoots, I used to do some like nightlife party stuff, and he was the organizer of the Playgirl moment, and I just wanted to see the negatives, even though he looked basic as fuck.
So hot.
But I still just wanted to see it, you know what I mean? Just a little hole.
Yeah, I was not attracted to him. I also I remain obsessed with how like plain and tepid Playgirl is. Oh, yeah. I haven't obviously bought it in a while, but like I always remember buying it in like, you know, 2004 or whatever, but when I was still like pseudo closeted or whatever, and you know, you'd open it up and there's like,
wasn't it?
Yep, it was. But you open up Playgirl, there's like six guys, three of them look like Burt Reynolds. Like, it's just like
a very don't ask, don't tell kind of nudie magazine. Like, it was that kind of,
wow. Yeah. I don't think, Playgirl was definitely of my youth. But then as soon as the internet came, I was like, ooh, give me some Sean Cody.
Yeah, man. I got into Sean Cody early. Go ahead. Oh, sorry, Gabe.
Oh, no. Just agreeing wholeheartedly with the advent of the internet. Because I remember when it happened and it was like my parents bought a computer and it was right next to our kitchen. And I would like, I would go to like kitchen. AOL chat rooms, but then like find links to like just pages of PNGs. And then I would drag them into a Word document and print them out.
Yes. And
then take them to the bathroom and not know where to put them. So I would flush them.
We had the exact same childhood.
I also took them into the shower. Yeah.
I had a folder, a high school, like, you know, like whatever regular folder that I had all my printouts.
Oh,
all my
you
beautiful
kept
printouts.
Them?
I kept them.
Oh, that's
because
old.
I had a family. I mean, I have a really big family. And so I knew my mom was very busy, so I could easily hide shit and she wouldn't notice it ever because she had too much going on. It was very frazzled.
Those old school printers that took like 90 seconds to print a photo, though, really created some
literally
tension.
Me sitting there as it prints out, watching to see if anyone's
coming. Oh my God, waiting at the top of the stairs. Did their movie end? Yes. Why is it not?
Are they still
longer?
Watching Walker, Texas Ranger? Yes, they are.
I was always prepared to pull the plug, yank it out, and just like deal with it later. you know, pull the plug on the printer, but yank then, out that piece of paper, and like,
what if it finishes printing at, you know what I mean? When it does that thing where it's like, we didn't finish. I have the other half of this page. Right. That fully happened to me once, right. And I'm glad I caught it.
I left a photo in the printer once accidentally, or it came out later or something, and someone else found it, and I was like, I don't know. Maybe, you know, the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you all remember the first time you got caught with gay porn?
Yes.
Okay. Totally. Yeah.
I don't think I ever technically got caught.
I got caught with a Playgirl at Borders, not at Borders, excuse me, at B. Dalton in the mall. I remember I used to put Playgirl in Rolling Stone magazine. I would take off the Saran wrap or whatever. I would go back into the section, the spirituality section, because no one was going there.
Yeah, no one's there.
And I would just sit and just look at the Playgirl. And one of the, like, the workers, the booksellers, came up to me and was like, get out. And she just like said, get out. And I was so terrified. And I was like, okay. And I got out.
How old were you?
Probably 10.
Oh my God.
Wow. I was like a kid. I was a little kid. Yeah.
Okay. You're she was just being homophobic, but she was fully you need to get out of here. Yeah.
I mean, I think she probably did me a solid there.
Wow. That's actually, I'm actually really surprised that you were like interested with porn by 10.
Oh, I'm the Drew Barrymore of faggots. I'm like, I started early and I have been consistent ever since.
I feel like I don't think I'd seen my first dick until I was like 15, 16. Yeah. I think I remember it took a while.
Relatively late for, like, I remember reading a statistic forever ago when we were writing up an article about this, about like how porn is like kind of supplanting sex education because kids are learning words related to sex and ideas surrounding sex very early on. And they're not being taught about kind of, I don't know, bodily autonomy and consent or even what reproduction is like in a very comprehensive way. I grew up in Florida, so this was definitely my story.
Ooh, where in Florida?
I grew up right outside Orlando. It was this tiny town called Oviedo. Do you know her?
No, I don't, but I'm obsessed with all of the suburbs around Orlando because my mother was so poor, we could never afford to stay in Orlando proper. So we'd always go to like some ho-dunk vacation rental in one of the suburbs of Orlando.
The
people of Florida, the people of Orlando, I should just say, I mean, y'all seem lovely, but you need to stick to having your tippins like restaurants and like, let's move on because there's not much else there. What was it like growing up in Orlando, Florida?
I don't know why anybody would fucking raise kids there. I'm sorry. I don't know what my parents were doing or thinking, but it was really wild. We were definitely one of those like weird, it was like, it felt kind of suburban, but also a little podunk. Like we had a chicken crossing sign on the road I would take to school.
Wow.
There was fully like feral chickens just like in the area. And then like a consignment store, a Baptist church, an Ace Hardware and a Popeyes where the chickens would fully hang out. This is like been documented online. It's the wildest part of Oviedo. It was a lot of hooking up in cars in like parking lots. Or like lying to my parents about going to like the Oviedo marketplace and like having a woman friend to drive me to the actual gay friend. So like my friend Kelly or Brittany would pick me up and then be like, okay, I'll be back to get you in like 2 hours when I'm done with my date. And then we would just like fake like we'd been hanging out all night.
Did you ever hook up in the parking lot of Popeyes?
Never. No, that was too cutty. The parking lot of the Target, maybe, you know, it happened like twice.
The Target, that's some bougie shit.
I was gonna say, don't feel mad.
I was fully Walmart. There was a huge Walmart bar house. We'd always go park there and just give a little blowjob there and move on.
A little handy in the park, a little bougie in the
watch those falling sales.
I stopped keeping track, but I think Elliot has hooked up in the parking lot of every big box store in America, I think, right? You finally got Big Lots recently. And so anyway.
Can we pivot that into a sponsorship? We got to make it happen.
A Big Lots sponsorship. Yes.
Well, Gabe, thanks for joining us for a lively, chill chat.
Of course.
You're the easiest person to do that with. It would be easy.
Where can people follow you on the internet?
Gross. Oh yeah! Oh my gosh, for sure. So on Twitter and Instagram, my handle is Gaybones. It's GAYBONEZ. It is a nickname from a college improv group that unfortunately is now haunting me because it's my public-facing internet handle.
Oh my god!
So that's great. You know, just to hold on to that. I have a website. I bought a .gay domain during the pandemic, which was super exciting. Mm-hmm. So gabeis.gay is a website that you can find me at.
I don't think I follow you on Instagram. I, like everyone listening, is going to follow you right now.
Oh, please do. Come join. Mm-hmm. I'm not at 10,000 yet, so I'm yearning for that swipe up.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Gabe.
Yeah, thanks, Gabe.
Absolutely. Thank you all for having me.
and another thing.
Ooh, are you guys feeling like, you know, you're getting out into the world and you don't know quite how to like conduct yourselves in the real world, or like how to, it's a thing called cave syndrome, and I feel it very acutely. There are things that are, I mean, it's not even so much, I've gained weight over COVID, and I've like the normal things that everyone has suffered, you know, experienced over COVID, the distance and everything. But there is a part of me that like now I don't really know how to sometimes conduct myself in certain settings and do certain things. And like some things feel new, and I don't feel necessarily anxiety over it, I guess, maybe a little, I don't know. There is that. And so the whole thing with cave syndrome is that it's twofold. There's either you feel anxiety over sort of, you know, doing things again, like going out in public or going in large groups, et cetera. Or on the flip side of it, you could also be skeptical of the science, be skeptical of the vaccines, be skeptical of sort of the taking off the masks and that we are in a safe place. And you're fearful of getting back out there because you are skeptical if it's safe or not. And there's a lot of that happening. What do you guys think?
It's two pronged. You know, I'm struggling a little bit right now, I think for a different reason, which was, you know, things have started obviously opening up and I've had some really busy weekends, but also my weeks are not as busy as they used to be, you know, 2 years ago. And I also like fear of missing out. The FOMO syndrome has come back where, you know, for a year and a quarter, everyone's sitting in their apartments and you don't have to worry about what vacations you're not going on or what cool things your friends are doing that you aren't, or parties or whatever. And like, that's come rushing back. So that's been, I think, what I've been dealing which is like, I'm ready to be, you know, fairly busy again. And I just don't think the world is fairly busy again yet, but that's actually bumming me out a lot more than it did like 6 months ago.
You know, oh my God, I fear of missing out. Yeah, I mean, I think it feels like the world is so busy again, no?
Well, yes, but I'm saying like,
it's not happening to him.
It's not like it was 2 years ago, you know, it's not like, you're going to three shows a week and like, you know, a party or two. It's like, you
there's
know,
the
you
artificial have... things. There's the, sure, those things are open. You can go to the bar, you can do those things, but like
absolutely.
The regular shows, a lot of those shows don't exist anymore. A lot of the things, the restaurants we would go to all the time don't exist anymore. So the normalcy of the things we once had can't happen at the frequency in which they used to happen.
I feel like it's just, I was like, I think like everybody, I'm like, I'm so ready to go back to bars and like make out, like I'm going to make out with randos and all this shit. And then it just did not happen. And I'm not by choice, like it just kind of, I'm a little overwhelmed by the speed and you know, size at which people are hungry to get back into big groups and stuff. And I'm like, I am a little daunted by it.
I mean, I past guest last Matthew Solomon, we had him on a couple, he was the commercial he texted me last night being like, are you coming to Akbar, because Akbar had some sort of big pride night thing. And I was like, oh, I don't do pride, first off. I won't do a crowd. I don't do pride crowds. And right now, because there is so much of excitement of that, of being out in public again and going out and like partying and making out, all these things, I don't want to be a part of the mayhem of it, just because that just annoys the fuck out of me. I just want to like walk into a normal bar and have a normal bar experience and not have to have someone hug me for a long time or like talk about how special it, how can you believe we're out again? Yes, I can. The science let me believe that we're out again and I'm at a fucking bar. Stop talking about it. Like I'm just sort of,
you don't
I'm
want to be of, reminded. Yeah.
I'm kind of in that boat. Yeah.
Another thing that has sort of struck me is that like, I keep having these moments of surreality where I will literally say to myself, did I really spend a year and a quarter sitting in my apartment? It's almost like I don't believe it. It was like hibernation and that I broke out of it. And now I'm not kidding. I have moments where I'm like, wait, no, I didn't do that all year. It was just a couple months. And then it's like, no, you spent virtually every day for 15 months sitting in your room basically all day, except for like grocery store shit or whatever.
Yeah.
And
you're a social person.
I am a social person.
Yes. Yeah. You're out. You keep a packed schedule.
I think I think we've talked about this, but I think the biggest sort of surprise to me is that like, I guess I expected to like run into people's arms crying after not having seen them for so long. But Brent, I think it was Brent who said like, with people, it's like, yeah, it's like, it's kind of just like, yeah, haven't seen you in a while. It's not that different. I guess if you count Zoom and all that stuff.
No, I feel the same way. And it's been like, I've seen a number of people who I had not seen for probably a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And instead of like sobbing and, you know, giving each other long hugs, you're just like, hey, what's up, man? And it's so anticlimactic that it's its own thing where you're like, this is so weird.
It's so weird
that I normally would see you six times a year at shows or party, whatever, at bars or something. And now I haven't seen you in forever. I'm seeing you again and I'm happy and I'm content and it's great. But yeah, there isn't like this sigh of relief. It's just like life is normal again. There it's almost like it never happened.
Similarly to sort of like, I mean, for me at least, for after chemo, after COVID, I'm kind of like not feeling obligated to be friends with everybody. You know what I mean? I'm feeling very like focused on the people that I want to spend my time with and that I want to go out with. And I've never been one, like if I'm not performing or if I'm not a part of a show or if I'm not going to see a friend show, I'm not going to go to a random thing. I'm not that person. And so like, I've always been very targeted in how I will go out and what I will do. But even now I'm very focused on, even just like with my birthday coming up in a few weeks, I'm like, I'm focusing on only like having the core people in my life, which is like basically you guys and Michael and a few others. And like, that's it. Like it's like under 10. And in a weird way, it's relaxing to know that like I have this core of people that I can just turn to and that is my core. So even if we go into lockdown again, that is my core. But at the same time, there is a lot of anxiety over saying no to people. I'm feeling it again, but by just being like, and I don't feel like I can say I don't want to do that because we haven't done it for a year. So who the fuck am I to say I don't want to do something that I haven't been able to do for, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I told myself personally, I was like, I just can't say no to anything. And I actually rarely don't. That's kind of generally how I've been. Mm. But I'm like, you know, you sat at home for a year. Like you have to like, you have to go to every garbage invite that you get.
Suddenly Brent is going to be like in New York at like Marie's Crisis.
Like, Brent has joined a knitting circle. He has fully joined a knitting circle.
T-shirt or pools at no pool, no shirts, no shirts off at Pools Anonymous.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
Even I knew about the bisexual track star. You're a homophobe.
My Aunt Joanne would say, I don't care if he's a Republican. Nasib sounds like he's an anti-Semite to me. How about Aunt Anne?
My Aunt Anne would say, the Target parking lot's a good place to have relations.
Ray, get the keys!
Thanks for listening. I'm Elliot. And happy Pride, everybody. That's
the point
to add that. Happy Pride. No, I think I just wanted to say again, like, if you listen to this podcast, it's nice. I'm glad and hopefully excited to know that there are people who, like us, are happy Pride exists and glad the events are being held and all that shit. But it's okay to also be quiet and appreciate it from a distance. There's nothing wrong with that.
From a nice air-conditioned apartment. Just you know, live your Pride 365 from the inside with the AC on.
That's right.
But with that said, that's Elliot Glazer. There's H. Allen Scott, and I'm Brent Sullivan.
Wow.
Brent.
I've gotten lots of flack these last few weeks.
Flack and toot.
Good Lord.